Let me put your mind at rest on one thing, at least. You are in no danger of being arrested.
Great Scott, you mean they've got the murderer?
No, but they've dropped you from the list of suspects.
Why?
Principally because I received a letter from Scudder on the 31st of May.
But he'd been dead a week by then.
Well, evidently he did not anticipate such an early demise. Now, his letters usually took a week to reach me. He had a mania for concealing his tracks. He was half genius, half crank, was Scudder. One of the bravest, yet always shivering with fright. Trouble was, he insisted on playing a lone hand, and that made him pretty well useless as a Secret Service man.
What did he say about me?
Well, enough to clear you, Mr. Haney. You've got his notebook.
Right here. We went through Scudder's notes. Sir Walter was very quick at picking up the cipher, and though he amended my reading in one or two places, I'd got the gist of it right. He sat silent for a while, looking very grave.
I wish I had more confidence in Scudder's judgment.
Don't you believe him, then?
Oh, he's right about the French high-up coming over to share our plans. That's happening the day after tomorrow. Oh, God known, I don't know, which is bad enough. But all this about war and the Black Stone. Scudder had a lot of odd prejudices, as well as an artistic temperament. The Black Stone. Der Schwarze Stein. It's a bit melodramatic, don't you think?
What about Karolides?
Well, that's the weakest part. No one in Europe wants to get rid of him. He'll outlast both of us, Hanny. He's in London now with not a whisper of trouble. Oh, Scudder's gone off the rails there, I'm afraid.
Excuse me, Sir Walter, but there's a trunk call from London. Mr. Heath, sir, wants to speak to you personally.
Oh, very well, Whittaker. Forgive me, Hanny. Help yourself to scotch or brandy.
Thank you.
I think I'll have one of those.
What happened?
I apologize to the shade of Scudder. Karolithos was shot dead this evening, a few minutes after 7.
Good morning, Sir Walter.
Morning, Annie. Hot dishes are over there. Kedgeree's rather good this morning. Help yourself to coffee, or Whittaker can bring tea if you'd rather.
I'll have coffee.
After you went to bed, I spent a busy hour on the telephone.
So you're already at work?
No, decoding a wire. Spoke to the First Sea Lord and the Secretary for War. They're bringing the Frenchman over today. This message confirms it. And for some odd reason, they've given him the code name Porker.
At least they've got things moving.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'll do any good. Your friends were clever enough to find out about the first arrangement. They'll discover the change soon enough. Give my head to know who's leaking them the information.
You've no idea at all.
We thought there were only 5 men in England who knew about this visit. You can be sure there were even fewer in France. They manage things better over there. You drive a car, Henny?
I did all right up in Galloway.
Well, you'll be my chauffeur for today. You've had a hand in this business from the beginning, and we're taking no risks. These are desperate men who are hardly likely to respect the country retreat of an overworked official. We'll drive up to town as soon as you're ready. Whittaker can bring the luggage by train.
10 minutes?
10 minutes.
We took the Bath Road and made good going. I landed Sir Walter at his house in Queen Anne's Gate by 11:30.
Thank you, Annie. Now, I needn't tell you to keep deadly quiet and lie low. One of our Blackstone friends were to spot you, there might be trouble.
Sir Walter...
Come and see me tomorrow, Hanny. I'd get some sleep if I were you. Good day.
I had lunch at the Savoy, and spent all afternoon walking the back streets of London. But when I dined in Jermyn Street, even the best part of a bottle of Burgundy did nothing to cheer me. I felt abominably restless. Here I was, a very ordinary fellow, with no particular brains, yet I felt that I was somehow needed to see this thing through. I told myself it was sheer conceit, that 4 or 5 of the cleverest people in the Empire had the job in hand, yet a voice kept telling me to be up and doing, or I would never sleep easy again. The upshot was that I decided to walk over to Queen Anne's Gate. I might not be admitted, but at least it was worth a try. At the corner of Duke Street, I passed a group of young men in evening dress who had dined rather well. I recognized one of them, and before I could turn away, he recognized me. It was my old friend, Mr. Marmaduke Jopley.
It's the murderer! Here, you fellas, hold him! It's Henry!
He gripped my arm, and his friends crowded round. And though I was not looking for trouble, my ill temper made me play the fool.
Let me go, Jopley, or you'll be sorry.
I let you go once before, Henry. I won't let it happen again.
Hey, what's this, gentlemen? What's the trouble?
Don't you recognize him, Constable? This is the man who did the Portland Place murder, and yes. I've got him safe.
Oh, gentlemen! Gentlemen! already. That's enough of that. Now then, Mr...
I tell you, that's Hannay. You saw him hit me. What more proof do you want that he's the killer?
Oh, shut up, Jopley. You don't know what you're talking about, as usual.
That'll do, sir. I think you'd better come along with me to the station.
I advise you to leave me alone, Constable, if you know it's good for you.
Take him off, Constable. He's a menace to society.
Scotland Yard knows all about me, officer. You'll get a proper wigging if you interfere.
Well, that's as may be, sir, but I saw you hit that gentleman cruel hard and him not do anything. Best come along with me, or will I have to fix you up?
Hey! Hey!
In a jiffy, I was in Pall Mall and going for St. James Park. I managed to dodge the policeman at the palace gates and put on a spurt. Once I was in the park itself, no one tried to stop me. I got to Queen Anne's Gate, which seemed almost deserted, and slowed to a walk. There were three or four cars outside Sir Walter's. I rang the bell, not knowing what I should do if the butler refused me entrance.
Whittaker.
Sir?
I must see Sir Walter. My business is desperately important.
Sir Walter is engaged at present, sir, and is not to be disturbed. But if you would care to wait...
Thank you.
Please sit down, sir. Is there anything I can get you?
What you can do, Whittaker, is put off anyone who comes to the door asking for me. I'm working with Sir Walter. He'll vouch for me.
I understand, sir. Leave it to me.
Yes? You've got Hannay the murderer in here. We've come to arrest him.
If you let me do the talking, sir. We have reason to believe that a fugitive from justice has taken shelter here. Let us in, will you?
I'm afraid I can't do that, Constable.
Look here!
This is the house of Sir Walter Bullivant, Permanent Secretary of the Foreign Office. Sir Walter has given orders that I am to admit no one, and I can assure you I have no intention of contravening those orders. Good night, gentlemen.
Now, just one minute, my man!
Thank you, Whittaker.
Not at all, sir. I don't think they'll disturb us again.
Well, good night, then, Monsieur Royer. General.
Good night, Alois.
Bow me low.
Good night, we've got things sorted out. Whittaker.
Sir.
Lord Alois, Colonel.
At once, Sir Walter.
We'll talk tomorrow, Bullivant. Good night.
Good night. Here you are, my lord.
In the car outside.
Yes, sir.
Lord Alois' face was familiar to anyone who read a newspaper. As Whittaker helped him into his coat, he glanced in my direction. For a second, our eyes met. And it was enough to make my heart jump. Something sprang into those eyes, and that something was recognition. It was unmistakable, even though it came and was gone in a moment.
Good night, my lord.
Whittaker. Where's the telephone?
This way, sir.
And the directory?
Here you are, sir. Holcroft, Alman, Alloa.
Hello. Central. Mayfair 8151, please. It's rather urgent. Hello. Lord Alloa's residence. Is his lordship at home? Ah, forgive me, but when did he return? Thank you. No. No message.
I still don't think the Germans...
Then forgive me, General.
I am sorry to disturb you, gentlemen.
This is Mr. Hannay, of whom I have spoken to you. I'm afraid, Hannay, your visit is ill-timed.
That remains to be seen, sir. I think you may find I'm in the nick of time. Who left you a moment ago?
Lord Alloa. What about him?
He was not Lord Alloa.
What?
His living image, yes, but not the First Sea Lord. It was someone who recognized me, someone I've seen in the last month. He'd scarcely left the doorstep when I rang up Lord Alloa's house. I was told his lordship came in half an hour ago and had gone to bed.
Then who?
The Black Stone, Sir Walter. That's who.
I shall telephone Alloa myself. Excuse me.
And I was left alone with gentlemen who, whatever the greatness of their positions, were looking pretty badly scared.
This... Black Stone, of which you speak, Monsieur Hannay.
Oh, I still think it's some nonsense of Scudder's. Clever fellow, no doubt of it, but not always reliable.
With the greatest respect, General, one may discount Scudder's prejudices, but I have found every one of his facts reliable.
Cryptic scribbles you can't make head or tail of. Schoolboy code names.
And who was it, General, who gave me the code name Porker?
Oh, I assure you, Monsieur Royer, that... Well, Bullivant? I spoke to Alloa in person.
Had to get him out of bed, very grumpy.
He had dinner with Malross and went straight home afterwards.
Look here. I know Alloway as well as I know anyone. You're not telling me that I sat next to someone pretending to be him without noticing.
That's what's so clever about it, General. You took Lord Alloway's presence for granted. I'll bet you didn't even look at him. Well,
Monsieur Hannay is correct. Our enemies have indeed been clever.
But if their object is to get our plans without our knowing it, why choose to impersonate Alloway, whom any of us might have spoken to beforehand?
Who better to impersonate than Alloway, who never says much? That shows you how well briefed they are.
All right. But if we have had a spy among us, how is he going to carry away all those facts and figures in his head? He's never seen them before. He didn't take a note. I don't see what good it can have done him.
One can train oneself to remember things as if one had taken a photograph. You notice he said little but went through the papers again and again. Mm. I would say he has them pretty well. When I was younger man, I too could do this trick.
Then I suppose the only thing we can do is change the plans.
Not without changing the geography of England.
Mm. And I spoke to him of the plans of my government. Such information would be worth many millions to our enemies. The man and his friends must be taken at once. This is the only way.
But we haven't a rag of a clue.
And they might have already communicated the plans by post.
Forgive me, General, but you do not understand the ways of the spy. He delivers in person what he knows and receives in person his reward. In France, we know something of the breed.
So there is still a chance?
Yes, Monsieur Hannay, if it is possible to watch all the ports and search all the ships.
But we must do this for the sake of our two nations.
We cannot search everywhere in 24 hours.
Impossible. We have to narrow it down.
Ah, I know. Scudder's notebook.
Oh, more of that damn nonsense. Oh,
where is it, Sir Walter? Quick, man, I think I remember something that may help us.
I have it here.
Thank you. Here we are. 39 steps. And here's another reference. 39 steps. I counted them. High tide, 10:17 p.m.
And what the devil's that supposed to mean?
Don't you see, General? Scudder knew where these fellows hid out, and he knew where they were going to leave the country, though he kept the name to himself.
Typical.
It's a place where high tide is at 10:17 p.m. tomorrow, the 15th of June.
What if they leave tonight?
They won't, General. I know Germans, and they're mad about working to a plan. They've got their routine, and they'll stick to it. What we need is a book of tide tables. That's where we should start.
I have one. On you go, Hanny. You seem to have taken charge.
Of course, it could be any number of places.
How will we know?
The clue must lie in the steps. 39 steps.
Could it refer to a port?
I rather doubt it, Monsieur. 39, doesn't that sound more like a staircase? Perhaps one leading to the sea.
What if they were going to catch a steamer?
Well, easy enough to look up the sailings. They'll be in the paper.
Here we are. Now, there's no steamer sailing at 10:17 p.m. tomorrow, so that's out.
Look here. Of course, I'm only guessing.
Oh, can't run a war on guesswork, can you?
Agreed, General, but if there's a riddle to be solved, my way of doing it, and I've had some success, is to use my brains as far as they go, and then when I come to a blank wall, I jump it with a guess. Mm. My guesses often turn out pretty right, General.
What do you guess, Monsieur Hannay?
Let's write down what we're fairly sure of. There's a staircase, perhaps several, one of which has 39 steps. It leads to a place from which they can only leave at high tide, which is 10:17. It's probably not a regular harbour.
Why not?
Do you know any harbour with 39 steps, General? Which means, and this is a guess, it's probably a stretch of open coast, which would imply they were going in a small boat, a yacht, or launch, or even a trawler.
That still leaves a pretty wide field, Hannay.
If you were a German in a hurry, where would you leave from? If you wanted a secret and speedy passage?
Not from any of the big ports, I agree.
Somewhere not too far from London, mm-hmm. Since that is where he has started from.
So, that cuts out the Channel, Scotland, the West Coast.
Leaves the East Coast, doesn't it?
Exactly, General. Let's say you are aiming for Ostend, Antwerp, or Rotterdam. That'd get you closer to Germany. Where would you go from?
Well, you're the one playing Sherlock Holmes.
Not me, General. I told you, this is blind guesswork, not at all scientific. But if we look at a map of the East Coast, myself, I'd plunk for a place between Cromer and Dover.
Why, in heaven's name?
Yes, I am content to trust Monsieur Hannay's instinct for the moment.
What we need is someone who knows that part of the coast. Sir Walter.
Hold on. I'll ring the Admiralty.
I'll come with you.
Brattlesham, you say? Hold on, Rathbone, and I'll tell him.
Radburn says there's a place in Norfolk, Brattlesham, beside a golf course. There are a couple of staircases to let people pick up their lost balls.
No, that's not it.
Yeah. Radburn, we don't think that can be it. What? Marine Parades?
It'll be somewhere less public than that.
Hear that, Radburn? What? Can't think of anything. Well, try, man. It's a matter of national importance. What? The Rough?
Where is it?
Describe it to us, Radburn. Near Bradgate. Yes, Kent, I know. Chalky headland, lots of villas on top.
That sounds more like it.
Go on, Radburn. He says it's a very high-toned sort of place. Mm-hmm. Residents like to keep to themselves. Lots of private staircases down to the beach.
Bradgate. High tide tomorrow, 10:27. Damn. Ask if he knows what time high tide is at the Rough, Sir Walter.
Rathbone, you heard that. Well? Thank you. High tide's 10 minutes before Bradgate.
I drove through the night, and a pink and blue June morning found me on the empty sands near Bradgate. A small destroyer was anchored not too far out, and the first thing I did was telegraph Sir Walter about it. Then I started climbing up and down the private staircases that led to the smart villas above.
6, 7, 38, 39, 40, 41, 41, 22, 23, 6, 37, 38, 39, Eureka.
I found out from the local estate agent that the house at the head of the 39 steps, Trafalgar Lodge it was called, belonged to a retired stockbroker called Appleton. I watched it all morning, and absolutely nothing happened to distinguish it from any of the other perfectly ordinary houses along the cliff top. But after lunch, my hopes were aroused by a smart white yacht, about 150 tons, that had anchored opposite the villa. I hired a small rowing boat, and under the guise of doing some fishing, I was able to have a closer look. Her name was the Ariadne.
Ahoy there! Afternoon! Think it'll rain? Maybe. Maybe not.
I thought the glass had fallen a bit, I came out.
Good arm.
Higgins?
Aye, sir.
Bosun wants you up.
Aye, sir. You have a very fine boat, sir, I may say, sir. It's extremely fast.
She is capable of speed when necessary.
He spoke English perfectly, too perfectly. And his collar, his jacket and tie never came out of England.
You've had good fishing?
I have, as you see. Plenty of cod about. You fish, sir?
Unfortunately, I do not get the time.
James, they're not here for long.
Sadly, that does not depend on me. Good day to you.
Goodbye.
I rowed back, still convinced I was on the right track. Until it occurred to me that the man impersonating Lord Alloa last night might have seen that I recognized him. Somehow I doubted it, but if he had, maybe the Black Stone had changed their plans, despite what I had said about Germans sticking to their routine. I decided to put in another hour or two watching the house.
You might take pity of my age, Percy.
Oh, if I let up a fraction, Uncle, you'd beat me hollow.
An old chap I'd seen before lunch, taking a stroll, was playing a vigorous game of tennis with a plump young man. Nothing could have been more innocently English.
Oh, sharp. I hope Elsie's bringing us a drink soon.
Oh, you can finish a set, surely. The best way I know of losing a few pounds. And I could do with that, even if you can't.
Try as I would, I found it hard to connect these two guileless citizens with the villains who had skewered Scudder to the floor and chased me all over Scotland. It seemed to me I'd set a trap for vultures and falcons and caught nothing but two plump thrushes. Then a third man arrived, a young chap on a bicycle.
There, you fellows!
Bob, my dear chap, good to see you. You fancy a game?
You can take my place, Bob. The old man's worked me up into a proper lava.
What's the score?
One set all. It's not for me, I promise you. I'm for a tub.
No stamina. It's the trouble of the young men of today. Nay, Bob.
No, I don't all like Percy, Mr. Appleton. I'll take you on tomorrow at the links, Bob. And give you a stroker.
Well, well. I'm not talking for drink, eh? I've worked up a thirst. What about you, Bob?
You put a pot in front of me and I'll drink it.
Oh, good. And cook tells me she's got a nice piece of salmon for his name. Come along.
They all went into the house, leaving me feeling like a precious idiot. If they were acting, where was their audience? For how could they know I was sitting 30 yards off in a rhododendron bush? Who could believe they were anything but what they seemed, three ordinary suburban Englishmen? And yet, they were three, one old, one plump, one lean and dark. Their house chimed in with Scudder's notes, and nearby was anchored a yacht with at least one German officer aboard. I thought of Scudder and Karolides and all Europe trembling on the edge of an earthquake, and resolved to go forward as if I had no doubts. I made three telephone calls, ate a meagre dinner, and 9:30 found me walking up the path to Trafalgar Lodge. The ground floor windows were all open.
And hog the port, Percy.
Sorry, Uncle.
What about you, Bob?
I have time before my train. I'll be glad of another glass.
I rang the bell and gave my card to a trim parlourmaid. I had hoped to surprise them into dropping their disguise, but I have to say that neat, middle-class suburban house with its golf clubs and polished brass completely defeated me. When the maid showed me to the candle-lit dining room, I hadn't an ounce of confidence left.
You wish to see me, Mr. Hannah? Shall we go into the smoking room, or would you like to join us in a glass of port?
We have met before, I think. I imagine you know my business.
My memory is no longer what it was, I'm afraid. You'd better tell me what you've come for I haven't the faintest idea.
Well, then, I've come to tell you that the game's up. I have here a warrant for the arrest of you three gentlemen.
Arrest? Good God, what for?
For the murder of Franklin Scudder in London on the 23rd day of last month.
Scudder? I've never even heard the name before.
I have, Uncle. It was the Portland Place murder. I read about it in the papers.
Yes.
Mr. Hanny, you must see that this is a ridiculous charge. Where do you come from?
Scotland Yard.
Scotland Yard, but...
Oh, don't get flustered, Uncle. This is a terrible mistake, but such things happen sometimes. We can easily show we're innocent. Now, on the 23rd, I was out of the country. Bob was in a nursing home, and you, Uncle, though you were in London... Well, you explained to Mr. Hanny what you were doing.
The 23rd? Oh, wasn't that the day after Agatha's wedding? Of course it was. I went up to town in the morning and lunched at the club with old Charlie Simons. And then I dropped in on Pam Davis for tea. She'd made me promise I would. And then, oh, yes. I dined at the Fishmonger's. I remember the punch didn't agree with me. But the next morning I was pretty seedy. So hang it all. There's a cigar box I brought back with me.
I think Mr. Hanny must realize he is mistaken. Of course, like all good citizens, we want to do whatever we can to uphold law and order. But we wouldn't want Scotland Yard making complete fools of themselves. Mr. Appleton?
Well, quite right, Bob. Quite right.
And to think I said you'd die of boredom if you moved here.
Oh, by Jove, yes. I say, it's quite a story to tell the club, eh?
It was all too confoundedly genuine. My heart went into my boots. My first impulse was to apologize and clear out. But I told myself I must see it through, even though I was to be the laughingstock of Britain. The light from the dinner table candlesticks was not very good, and to cover my confusion, I got up and turned on the electric light. The sudden glare made them blink, and I stood scanning the three faces. I made nothing of it. There was nothing in their appearance to prevent them being the three who had hunted me in Scotland, but there was nothing to identify them. They seemed exactly what they professed to be, and I could not have sworn to one of them.
Well, Mr. Hannay, are you reassured?
Mr. Appleton...
It really is a bit thick, you know.
We could ask to see your warrant, I suppose. Not that I wish to cast any aspersions.
Why don't you march us all off to the local police station to be done with it? If not, I've got a train to catch.
Really, Bob, they must let Mr. Hanny make up his own mind.
He looked steadily at me, and I suddenly saw his eyelids fall in that hawk-like hood that fear had stamped on my memory. The three faces seemed to change before my eyes and reveal their secrets. The young one was the murderer. Now I saw cruelty and ruthlessness, where before I had only seen good humor. His knife, I made certain, had skewered Scudder to the floor. His kind had put the bullet in Carolides. The plump man's features seemed to dissolve and form again as I looked at them. He hadn't a face, only 100 masks that he could assume when he pleased. The chap must have been a superb actor. Perhaps he had been Lord Alloa of the night before. Perhaps not. It didn't matter. I wondered if he was the fellow who had first tracked Scudder and left his card on him. Scudder had said he lisped, and I could imagine how the adoption of a lisp might add terror. But the old man was the pick of the lot.
Well, Mr. Hannay, what do you propose to do?
I reached in my pocket. In an instant, the lights were out. But before the men I had stationed in the grounds could come to my aid, my enemies leapt to their feet, and one of them gripped me from behind, preventing me from using my pistol.
Schnell, Franz! Das Boot! Das Boot!
The youngest of the three leapt through the window and made for the 39 steps. I grappled the old chap in the rear pool of policemen. Franz was followed, but I could see him get clean away across the moonlit lawn. And then my prisoner broke from me and flung himself at a switch on the wall.
He's safe. The steps are blown. You cannot follow now. He's on the Ariadne, and you will never catch him. The Black Stone has triumphed.
His eyes flamed with pride, and I realized that he was more than a spy. In his foul way, he had been a patriot. But as we handcuffed him, I had the last word.
I hope Franz will bear his triumph well. But I should tell you, sir, that the Ariadne has been in our hands for the last hour.
Take them away.
Seven weeks later, as all the world knows, we went to war. I joined the new army the first week, and owing to my Matabele experience, got a captain's commission straight off. But I had done my best service, I think, before I put on khaki.
In The 39 Steps by John Buchan, Richard Hannay was played by David Rintoul. The other parts were played by Jimmy Chisholm, Michael Elder, Crawford Logan, David McHale, Alexander Morton, Sandy Nielsen, and John Shedden. The 39 Steps was dramatized for radio by Peter Buckman and directed in our Glasgow studios by Patrick Rayner.